Let's open our Bibles to Judges chapter 8, verse 29, where we left off yesterday. We just finished the story of how Gideon became the new judge of the Israelis by defeating the Midianite menace that had been plaguing them for about 7 years. Now, the book of Judges is demonstrative of this cycle that takes place amongst the Israelis, where they get involved in public sin, which then brings the judgment of God, and that judgment includes their subjugation under some foreign power. This causes the Israelis to fall into sorrow over this subjugation, and eventually they will involve themselves in supplication to God. That is, they will repent and call out to God that he would end this time of subjugation and sorrow. And once they supplicate God and God agrees it is time, he sends them a new savior, a new judge. And that judge then leads the people for a period of time. And as long as the judge remains strong and keeps the sin at a controlled level, then everything goes okay, at least, for the Israeli people. But once the judge is dead and gone, once he loses his strength morally, then things start popping open to the sin again, and the cycle starts once more. So we have Gideon, who has begun his judgeship of 40 years. And I believe that period is this, 1182 to 1143 BC. That's my time frame for the 40 years of peace under Gideon. Now, unfortunately, Gideon lets his position take him down a dark path. And this is a sad reality, but even some of our heroes will make bad choices because of maybe the accolades that they are receiving, the celebrity status that they receive. When we talked yesterday, we know that one of the choices that Gideon made that came back to bite Israel was that he took about 40 pounds of earrings from the dead Midianites, and he had them made into an ephod, a victory vest, if you will, that he probably wore from time to time. But this victory vest soon turned into an object of worship, and that was not good. We now find out in the next verse, that is verse number 29 and verses 29 and 30, that he, even though he turned down the kingship, he began acting as if he were one of the kings of the Middle East. And the way that the kings acted was that they took many wives, because wives represented alliances, business deals, treaties between himself and other regions and other leaders. So, verse 29 of Judges 8 says, Yarub Baal, now that's Gideon's nickname, it means, let Baal contend for himself. Yarub Baal, the son of Joash, went and lived in his own house. So he's back at Ophrah, which we're guessing is somewhere within, you know, a couple of hours from Shechem. Now, Gideon had 70 sons, his own offspring, for he had many wives. So he's acting like a Middle Eastern potentate and increasing his heirs. He's got 70 of them. But he also has an illegitimate son. Verse 31, his concubine, who was in Shechem, also bore him a son, and he called his name Abimelech. Now, I guess when I say illegitimate, I should modify that in that he is not his full right son. There's a distinction made between wife contracts and their offspring, because those offspring are full sons, and concubines, who are secondary wives, whose sons don't get all the rights and privileges of a son of a wife. So Gideon has some sort of relationship with a woman living in Shechem. And together they have a baby boy. And Gideon apparently, once this son is born, must be thinking about what he passed on earlier. That is the kingship. And so he gives him a name, Abimelech, which is the Hebrew phrase, my father is king. So Gideon is, as I said, going down a dark path in his later years. And when that happens with a leader, especially when we're talking about in the book of Judges, the sin begins to burble up again before he's even dead. And the sinful activities and practices start coming out more into the open. And that seems to be what was occurring in the latter portion of Gideon's leadership. And then he died. Verse 32, Gideon, the son of Joash, died in a good old age and was buried in the tomb of Joash, his father, at Ophrah of the Abiezrites. And I told you that more than likely he lived up into about his 80s, based on approximately how old he was when he started this. And then we find out that the death of the judge brings the cycle start again with sin and God's judgment. Verse 33, as soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baal, the Baalim, the many idols of Baal, the Canaanite god, and made Baal Berit their god. Now, I need to talk to you about this Baal Berit thing, because it is tied in with a story that we talked about much earlier, a legitimate story that should not have ended this way. Baal Berit is connected with Shechem. And Shechem is the site of the blessing and cursing ceremony of the Israelis whenever they entered the Promised Land. And part of that blessing and cursing ceremony that was designed by Moses and carried out by Joshua was the standing up of stones, which were then whitewashed, and the words of the covenant were written upon them. And the words of this covenant were at least the book of Deuteronomy, possibly even more of the writings of Moses that the Israelis needed to understand the covenant. And so this standing stone area at Shechem would have been a memorial to the covenant of the true and living God, and would have been a special place of meditation and even worship of a sort. Now, over time, unfortunately, especially during the time of the judges when every man did what was fit in his own eyes, this standing stone shrine was enclosed inside of a building, and perhaps some of its original intention was lost. Until finally, by this time period, the Israelis turned that shrine building into a worship site for Baal, the thunder and lightning god of the Canaanites, which they were kind of merging with Yahweh, he who is the God of creation and the God of the Israelis. Because in Canaanite language, Baal means Lord. And it could be used by the Israelis as a term for he who is. Berit, the word that we find here, is covenant in Hebrew. So we read here that the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baalim and made the Lord of the covenant their God, Baal Berit, Baal of the covenant their God. So we see here a very early attempt to merge Canaanite theology with Israeli theology at an Israeli worship site. It's very, very sad. And Gideon, apparently, is somehow tied in with this worship site. And it could be that his victory vest, the ephod that was made of all those earrings of gold, was used in ceremonies at this covenant site. And now that he's dead and buried, his victory vest may have been turned into the vest used by a priest of Baal Berith, Baal of the covenant, the Lord of the covenant. So I know there's some speculation involved in that, but there is clearly some sort of cult practice that is going on at Shechem, at this site, that is somehow emerging of Baal and Yahweh. Verse 34. The people of Israel did not remember he who is their God, who had delivered them from the hand of all their enemies on every side, and they did not show steadfast love to the family of Yerubbaal, that is Gideon, in return for all the good that he had done to Israel. Now that's explained in just a moment as to how they failed to show proper respect for his family. Chapter number 9. Now Abimelech, the son of Yerubbaal, remember this is the guy whose name means my dad is king. So Abimelech, who is the son of a concubine living at Shechem, he was born there and grew up there, and he's got to be at least somewhere around his 20th birthday at this point. So he went to Shechem to his mother's relatives and said to them and to the whole clan of his mother's people, say to the in the ears of the leaders of Shechem, which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Yerubbaal rule over you, or that one rule over you? Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. So this kid gets it in his head that he needs to be the king of Israel. His dad may have turned down the offer early on, but his name reminded him all the time that his dad should have been king. And who but himself would be the better candidate to take this kingship upon himself? And he asks his mom's family and the people of Shechem, the leaders of Shechem, to back him in this, because that would make things better for them, being related and connected to the new king of Israel. So verse 3, his mother's relatives spoke all these words on his behalf in the ears of all the leaders of Shechem, and their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he's our brother. And so they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal Berit, with which Abimelech hired worthless and reckless fellows who followed him. So the people of Shechem back his play for the kingship by taking money, silver, basically pieces of silver, out of the donations made to the shrine building originally devoted to the true and living God at the site of the blessing and curse ceremony where the standing stones were set up. So they take the divine funds, the sacred funds, and give it, they give symbolically 70 pieces of silver to him, one piece of silver against every one of his brothers that were his contenders for the throne. And he hires a gang, a mercenary force. Verse 5, he went to his father's house in Ophrah. Remember, his dad has only been dead a very short time now. And he killed his brothers, the sons of Yerubbaal, 70 men on one stone. So he captures them, catches them unaware, except for one guy. So he gets 69 of them, and one gets away. And he executes them with his thug army right there at his dad's place. But Jotham, the youngest son of Yerubbaal, was left, for he hid himself. And all the leaders of Shechem came together, and all Beth Milo, and they went and made Abimelech king by the oak of the pillar at Shechem. Now, Beth Milo may in fact be another town just a few miles to the west of Shechem, so that Shechem is kind of at one end of the valley that sits between Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal, and Beth Milo is another city at the other end of the valley. That seems to be kind of the configuration we're talking about here. So these twin cities by the twin mountains, they get together, and at a sacred site, they declare that Abimelech, the son of Gideon, is the new king of all Israel. Now, when it was told to Jotham, he went and he stood on top of Mount Gerizim. Now, not up at the peak, but rather down at some portion of it that's above the gathering site for the coronation. High enough that he can escape, but low enough that he can be heard as he disrupts the coronation. So he cried aloud and said to them, "Listen to me, you leaders of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, 'Reign over us.' But the olive tree said to them, 'Shall I leave my abundance by which gods and men are honored and go hold sway over the trees?' So the trees said to the fig tree, 'You come and reign over us.' But the fig tree said to them, 'Shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit and go hold sway over the trees?' So the trees said to the vine, 'You come and reign over us.' But the vine said to them, 'Shall I leave my wine that cheers God and men and go hold sway over the trees?'" Now, what he's doing here is he's telling a quick fable. Now, the difference between a parable and a fable is a parable is about true-to-life things. A fable includes some sort of thing that doesn't normally happen in life, such as plants talking and having kingships and things like that. But the illustration is not going to be lost on the people. Israel has had several good judges that saved them out of bad periods. And some of them have been offered the chance to be king, such as Gideon. And they turned it down. But he goes on in his fable to show this latest guy that is not even worthy to be compared to those previous men, he's the one that you want to make king. Verse 15, the bramble, then all the trees said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in good faith you're anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." So the bramble is full of itself, and it makes a threat that it's going to burn down the trees of Lebanon. Then Jotham makes the application. "Now, therefore, if you have acted in good faith and integrity when you make Abimelech king, and if you've dealt well with Yerubbaal and his house and have done to him as his deeds deserve, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you from the hand of Midian, and you've risen up against my father's house this day and killed his sons, 70 men on one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the leaders of Shechem, because he's your relative. If you have acted in good faith and integrity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the leaders of Shechem and Beth Milo, and let fire come out from the leaders of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech." And then Jotham ran away and fled and went to Beer and lived there because of Abimelech, his brother. So Jotham calls them to account for this bad choice that they're making. Making a thug, a secondary son of Gideon, into their king. And killing, murdering Jerubbaal's sons. Ending his lines through them. He puts a curse on them. "May fire go bidirectionally and destroy all of you, him and you." And then he runs off. Apparently, he goes across the Jordan and hides out in another tribal area. That's what the suggestion is by Beer here. There's a place over there named Beer, which just means a fountain or a well. We jump ahead now. Verse 22. Abimelech ruled over Israel 3 years. So this is the first time that the subjugator in the cycle has not come from the outside. It's come from the inside. But the cycle is still intact. This is happening because of the sinful choices of the Israelis. So verse 23, God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the leaders of Shechem, and the leaders of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech, that the violence done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might come and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who strengthened his hands to kill his brothers. And the leaders of Shechem put men in ambush against him on the mountaintops, and they robbed all who passed by them along that way, and it was told to Abimelech. So Abimelech is out there. He's ruling as if he were a king, but he's actually more of a tyrant. And the Shechemites, who put him in place, they're beginning to regret their choice. And it might be that they're not getting a good cut of his illicit reign financially. So they're ambushing some of his guys and taking their stuff. And Abimelech gets word of this. And he has to feel that he's going to have to do something about Shechem. In the meantime, we've got another guy that comes into the story. Verse 26, Gaal, the son of Ebed, moved into Shechem with his relatives, and the leaders of Shechem put confidence in him. So he kind of becomes their next golden boy. They went out into the field and gathered the grapes from their vineyards and trod them and held a festival. And they went into the house of their God and ate and drank and reviled Abimelech. Now, the house of their God is that same shrine building that I was talking about earlier. It's the shrine building of the covenant stones. It was originally devoted to God of the covenant, Yahweh of the covenant, He who is of the covenant. But it's now being talked about as Baal, Berit, Baal of the covenant, the Lord of the covenant. And so the Shechemites have started their own little cult that is a twisting merger of the true and living God with the thunder and lightning God of the Canaanites. And so here they are celebrating probably what's equivalent to the Feast of Tabernacles, because it's the right time of year for it. And this new guy is there drinking to excess and making mockery of Abimelech. Gaal, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is this Abimelech? And who are we of Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Yerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer? Serve the men of Hamor, the son of the father of Shechem, but why should we serve him? Would that this people were under my hand, then I would remove Abimelech. I would say to Abimelech, increase your army and come out." So this guy is challenging Abimelech to fight for the control of Shechem. And that's where we'll pick up the story next time we're in the Word.